You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards.
Nick Hughes is the co-writer of the controversial Blumhouse film, The Hunt. It's about a group of elite liberals who literally kidnap right-wingers to hunt them for sport. The film was supposed to release last fall, but was canceled by Universal following two mass shootings. President Trump himself tweeted that the film was just another example of liberal Hollywood's attempt to inflame and cause chaos. The movie is finally getting a release, and I talked to Nick about his experience and why he thinks now is a much better time for the film to hit theaters. You may also know Nick's work from the HBO show The Leftovers, but here's a clip from The Hunt, starring Betty Gilpin and two-time Oscar winner Hilary Swank.
What is happening?
What is all of this?
Did you see that article? Every year, these liberal elites kidnap a bunch of normal folks like us and hunt us for sport.
The last I heard, free speech still exists.
Don't First Amendment me.
It wasn't real.
Everybody get out of here!
We were joking.
There's been a killing spree. You gotta come here right now.
You actually believed we were hunting human beings for sport. But you are.
We have an opportunity here to teach these people. These are not real people. They're actors.
You wanted it to be real, so you decided it was.
What kind of sick people would even think of something like that?
White people. We're the worst.
Hi, Nick. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
My favorite line in the film is when one of the characters says, "I have a podcast."
And that is one of my favorites, too.
Everybody laughed, including me.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed this film. It really surprised me in so many ways. We'll talk about it, but maybe you could tell me a little bit about how you became a writer. And FYI, I'm a big fan of Leftovers. So maybe you can go back to the beginning and let us know how you got started.
Sure, yeah. For me, I kind of came of age right in the iMovie era. So it actually started just making little movies with my friends. And we would just sort of make up the writing part as we went along, but as they sort of got more elaborate, we started to realize, oh, you have to actually sort of write some stuff down. It makes it more helpful. So it really did start from this oddly practical place of needing a blueprint for something that you were going to make. But to me, it was just really fun to get to, you know, be part of a team that made something and then, you know, show it to people and hopefully entertain them. And I always kind of, from an early age, wanted to keep doing that. And so after college, I sort of fell into TV. I was an assistant on the first season of Leftovers, a writer's assistant, which is a great job because you're basically the court stenographer. You have to record the entire 8-hour conversation every day that's happening in a writer's room. And so that was like grad school for me. Mm-hmm. And working for Damon was amazing. And we got along really well. And luckily, he promoted me for the second season of that show. And it just sort of went from there.
So tell me a little bit about the inspiration for The Hunt. I read that you guys, because you wrote this with Damon, that you were sort of inspired by these, or frustrated maybe is a better word, by these conspiracy theories after the 2016 election.
Yeah, well, sort of that was the second part of it, I would say.
Oh, okay.
I would say the first part of the origin of this movie was Damon and I actually were hanging out during lunch while we were editing the penultimate episode of The Leftovers, which we wrote together, and Craig Zobel directed. We were kind of talking about what's next, and Damon said, "I always wanted to write a Blumhouse movie. You know, I feel like we could write it in, you know, 3 weeks, and Zobel could direct it." And it actually took it more than a year. So, it does not take 3 weeks.
I was going to say, three weeks.
I think he was joking, kind of. But anyway, but he was like, "And I've always loved the idea of The Most Dangerous Game as a Blumhouse movie." And I was like, "Let's do it." And he said, "Well, the thing is, unless you have a really good reason for whoever's hunting people to be hunting people, You know, I don't know that it's worth it, because that's sort of, he thought that was the key, which I thought was really interesting.
I think it's an excellent observation.
Yeah, idea. It's like, because that is the premise, right, of all these movies. It's like, in The Hunger Games, you know, it's, there's this really well-built-out world and the sort of the 12 districts and, you know, the whole idea that this is sort of what keeps the political system intact. And it has such weight to, like, the purpose of the game itself. So we just started exchanging ideas, and Pizzagate was one of the things we started talking about. And then I kind of was thinking about it one day, and I called him up and I said, you know, what if there was a way to sort of combine Pizzagate and, like, Double Jeopardy, the Ashley Judd movie, which I love.
Can I just clarify that? So, yeah. Pizzagate is when they thought Hillary Clinton was running a...
Yes, they thought Hillary Clinton and others, there was a conspiracy that was based on online information. It would actually all started with a phone hack of John Podesta's phone, I think, who was the campaign manager for Hillary in 2016. And the people sort of used all these little bits and pieces from the WikiLeaks drop that had happened to sort of put together a theory that Comet Pizza, which is a popular campaign stop for Democratic candidates in Washington, had a basement where they were trafficking in child sex trade.
So twisted.
Yes, and then a man who genuinely believed that this was happening and that if he didn't do something, these kids would, you know, face a horrible fate, went with a AR-15 to Comet Pizza and demanded to see the basement, and there was no basement. So very luckily no one was harmed in that, but we just found it to be a fascinating story, and, you know.
So Pizzagate combined with Double Jeopardy, the Ashley Judd film, which I have seen.
Yes, which I don't want to get too into spoilers for the movie, but...
Of course.
But if you are accused of something and everyone believes you did it, then you could argue that you could just do it. In Double Jeopardy, she's accused of killing her husband, goes to jail, gets out. Knows all along that he's alive and goes to kill him because why not?
Okay. Sounds good to me.
So when I sort of came back to him with that is when we really started to get going. That was the kicking off point. And then the idea of sort of also flipping it on its head and having sort of these like super wealthy elites that were sort of like, you know, more similar to perhaps people that we encounter in our lives as, you know, Los Angeles-based screenwriters, being the villains was really fun for us. Because it was kind of like, this is what we know, and that's a great thing to make fun of, you know? Like, and it was exciting to kind of make jokes about ourselves. To talk about these people who are really concerned with, like, how they're perceived and the right way to say things, and very cultured, and also shooting people in the woods.
I love that tickles you.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised after watching The Leftovers. That TV show blew my mind, but please continue.
And then, you know, another thing we were thinking about from a screenwriting perspective is sort of like, whoever wakes up in the woods in these type of movies, because we're certainly not the first, and doesn't remember how they got there, and is then being shot at, that's going to be the hero. Automatically, you're rooting for that person. So we thought it was kind of fun to be like, well, what if we're the type of people that are shooting at that? Let's start there, you know? And these are sort of a collection of everyday sort of Americans that are experiencing this. And then you get to follow them as they try to find out what the hell is going on.
The good guys end up being the sort of right wing, bright-leaning people, sort of the kind of, some of them are kind of like rednecks, like stereotypical people that you would think of as Trump supporters. And then it ends up that the bad guys are these liberal elite people that you're talking about. How did you balance those two? I mean, did you ever want to kind of make the left-leaning people good guys, or how did you kind of separate those two?
Well, as I said, it's kind of like, I feel like there's a real comfort in making fun of yourself or a version of yourself. And I think we were, you know, wary of making fun of people that were less similar to us. People that are from different parts of the country. The United States is a wildly diverse place. That's the reason why it's special and the reason why it's messed up, you know? Like, but I mean, I think for us, for the prey, for the people being hunted, we tried to sort of not make them seem all too similar, to give them sort of different backgrounds and origin stories. And like, there is a broadness to some of that and some comedy. And I think that if there's any kind of satire in the movie, it's sort of these exaggerated characters. But we didn't want them to feel like that easy to really group. And we also thought that like people on the right and the left do come in, you know, all shapes and sizes. So, you know, we didn't want to portray them all in exactly the same way.
What I loved about the movie is that it keeps twisting and turning and surprising you. And you sort of meet these people in the beginning and you think, oh, you know, that's my hero. And then boom, there's a bullet through their head. Maybe tell me a little bit about that strategy.
it's
unconventional.
Yes. Well, Scream, Kevin Williamson, you meet Drew Barrymore, who was, you know, I think sort of the biggest star in that movie. Mm-hmm. And I watched that, you know, on VHS, I think, or DVD, depending. I had no idea that that was what was going to happen. What was going to happen to her was that she's going to die in the first 10 minutes, and I was just like, "Whoa, that's completely, you know, that's there's something so cool about that." So in some ways, we just ripped off Kevin Williamson. But it's funny that you say like this is our hero, because in the actual script, when we introduce Daisy, who's Emma Roberts' character, who's the first character you meet.
Yeah, big star. I thought, for sure.
And we describe her character and her waking up, and we say, "And this is your hero." And then, as the movie proceeds, that changes, and then we say, "And this is our hero." And then, when we actually got to a third perspective character, it was like, "No, and seriously, this is our hero." So we just thought that was so funny. I mean, when David and I were writing it, we would meet for coffee for a couple hours every morning, and write sort of come up with the structure of the movie, and I would take notes, and really like. We just kind of started with like, you know, let's just sort of muddle our way through it and just like try to sort of like throw ideas at each other as to what happens next, and then just like see where we're at when we get to the end. And that was sort of the first pass through. But as we were doing that, it was really just like us both trying to make the other one laugh by like how sort of what crazy thing could happen. Like we actually like sort of figured out that there was this laugh test where like it would never be like, "Oh my God, that's amazing. Like, we got it." It would be like, "Oh my God." Like, when you're just laughing, like, "Can we do that?" Like, that was sort of like our sweet spot. Like, you know, and sometimes it was too absurd, but like, usually, like, when it was so out there that we got the other person laughing at the sheer sort of like, you know, out of left fieldness of the next story move, we kind of knew we were in the place that we wanted to be from a storytelling perspective.
You took risks.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like we try to keep it interesting for ourselves, you know. That's where it comes from. It's not like oh, we gotta be, you know, risky here. It was just like, well, what would I think would happen, you know? Like, I think that's such a fun way to think about like storytelling and screenplays. Is like everyone has seen so many movies and TV shows. They have such a wealth of knowledge. Even people who have no interest or professional relation to the craft of filmmaking, they're still kind of in a way all experts, because we all know, like, you know, like you walk into this house and it's haunted, and you know that the floorboards are creaky and the wind is blowing and it's dark and shadowy, and like you're like, "Oh, this is gonna be bad for this person," you know.
Yeah, the music.
You're like, "Get out of there, get out of there." So that's the thing, where, you know, anytime you can figure out what you try to take your best guess at what the convention would be, and then flip it. That's just like fun, because it's like, what would we want to see? We'd want to see something that we were surprised by completely.
I think it's really important these days, especially for my listeners who are up and coming writers and, you know, learning the craft. You really have to stand out, and I think by taking that risk and by, you know, not conforming to convention is a way to get noticed. Would you agree with that?
Yes, for sure. I think if you can surprise a reader as an up and coming writer, that's it. You're so almost already there, you know. if you can make them think they're on one journey and they're actually on another one, and I think even like to your point, even with, like, you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has so much behind it and such a built-in fan base, but it's also been so sort of extraordinarily successful. And I think that's one of the things that they consistently do. They take huge risks. I mean, like, you look at Thor. Thor 2 is sort of one of the few movies that was people didn't necessarily love in that franchise, and they go out and make Ragnarok, and it's like totally, like, it's Taika Waititi, it's like Led Zeppelin, they're putting Hulk in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have Jeff Goldblum with, like, crazy eye makeup playing a weird, like, like, and it's just that, like, that strategy works for, like, the biggest franchise in the world. Like, you know, you could still be surprising. And, like, you know, some of the other, I think some of the DC movies and stuff that have sort of weren't as popular sort of went the more sort of dour, gritty, serious route. And, like, I think that element of flipping the expectations is just, like, it's never going to not be exciting to people if you can do it in a believable way.
So I have to ask you, because this movie was supposed to be released.
Yes.
And then there was this, it created sort of its own conspiracy theory.
Yes.
And then there was a point where it looked like it wasn't going to get released at all. What was that like for you, and what did the studio tell you?
It was definitely, I mean, I was really excited for people to see the movie, so it wasn't easy to have to wait for that to happen or to sort of live in that unsure space. But, I mean, I think the studio made absolutely the right decision at the time, given everything that was going on. And I actually think that now is almost sort of even a better time for it to be coming out, because it's like, we're with this election especially, like, one of the things the movie, I think, tries to speak to is, like, the crazy level of polarization in our country, like, taken to the most insane, hopefully fun, wild way. So I think that, like, you know, we're all watching this election so closely, and also I feel like on both sides people are already kind of tired of it. And, like, there's this mixture of, like, obsession and fatigue, and I feel like, you know, we're speaking to that cultural moment, hopefully.
Absolutely. And I will say I am disappointed that there is no female candidate for president, but I was thrilled to see two strong women in your movie. And I'm talking about Crystal, Betty Gilpin, and Athena, Hilary Swank. Mm-hmm. And then they battle it out. And it was just, it was poetic, it was beautiful, it was inspirational. So thanks for at least adding those two characters to our, you know.
I'm so glad you thought so. I think so,
film
too.
Universe.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Crystal, the main character, is all about, like, sort of expectations and sort of judging a book by its cover. And I think the fact that she is a woman from Mississippi who has a bit of a drawl, who doesn't really need to explain herself, I think a lot of the characters in the movie think that she's the dumbest person in the movie, and she's actually the smartest. And that was always just fun to us. Like, even the word Chris, the name Crystal, I feel like there's a, invites, like, a judgment that ends up being absolutely wrong. And so that was amazing. But I mean, we also just got so lucky having Betty. I feel like her performance is,
she was great,
next level. Like, that was, seeing her audition was,
Thank you so much for talking to me. I wish you the best of luck with this movie.
Yes, I'm so glad you liked the movie. Thank you.
And hopefully I'll talk to you again sometime.
Alrighty, I hope so too.
Okay.